The following is a radio interview of Michael Freer, author of The Benevolent Dictator, on Job Talk Radio Show, Chicago, WJJW AM. Thursday, June 30th, 2011, 4:10 p.m. Central Time.
Dictator, but more importantly, Michael Freer was the co-founder of Office Max in 1988, starting with one store and $20,000 of his own money, which is an amazing story. We all know Office Max. And he just leaves that venture and goes off to two more. So he's a dream serial entrepreneur. We are so thrilled that he's here today. The book is amazing, The Benevolent Dictator. So we welcome The Benevolent Dictator, Michael Freer. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
I just like to say this to you. I know you don't know this about me, but I feel personally that I might have kept Office Max really doing well.
Well, that's great. Thank you.
Just FYI, and I'm willing to help you in other ventures, but I grew up with a family that loved office supplies.
Great.
Your store was a dream.
Well, thank you. That's good to hear that.
So tell us what made you today now think about doing The Benevolent Dictator? Why was the timing right?
I've been a syndicated business columnist and have always enjoyed writing and have written for 8 years for a chain of magazines called Smart Business. And I wrote these goofy little once a month, and it was about life and liberty, the pursuit of being successful and having fun doing it. And I wrote them, and I wasn't sure anyone was reading it. And then all of a sudden, I started getting a lot, right after the first few that I wrote, I started getting a lot of letters. And then about a year later, won some national awards and continued to win these awards. And I said, gee, maybe people really care about what I'm writing. And I just started to write the book and put it together and wrote it. And the real fun thing about being a entrepreneur and a business person is I think the number one job is to be a teacher. And if I can spawn one or two additional entrepreneurs, it'd be a home run for me and a home run for them, and in part what I've learned, sometimes learned through pain and suffering, and maybe save some people some effort.
Well, I know that as an entrepreneur myself, one of the clear messages that's thrown at you over and over again is, you know, the customer is always first, the customer is always right, and you want to take care of your employees, and it basically comes across that you want to be all things to all people and make sure everybody else is happy. But the title of this book somewhat contradicts that. The Benevolent Dictator is hey, I need to make these decisions despite what you guys are saying. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. And I think, first of all, is you want to have a book that has got a good title that says something and stands out from the crowd. The simple answer is the emphasis in the book is the word benevolent. Benevolent simply means that you do the greater what is for the greater good for the most number of people, starting with your customers, your employees, and your investors and stakeholders. Darndest thing happened to me along the way. Every time I would do what was best for the customers first, because I look at everything through the lens of the customer, I would get more personally. And that's where that part of the name came from. The dictator really is, and this is the reality of running a business. I've now started about three big businesses, including Office Max and now Max Wellness. But the dictator portion of the title means that when the time for talking is done and you're at that fork in the road, someone has to make the decision. The trick in starting a business and building one is you have to go from mind to market faster than anyone else, particularly your competition. Anytime you put three people in a room, you have difficulties at times getting everyone to agree. With a wasting asset, two of the most important wasting assets in a business are the clock on the wall. Each second ticking off is one less second you have. And every dollar that you're not investing and making things happen is a dollar you're losing. So dictator part is a little bit whimsical to the extent that benevolence is number one. Dictator is when the time for talking is done, someone's got to make the decision. And sometimes the decisions in business, and you know this as being an entrepreneur, is some of the decisions sometimes are very difficult because they're not going to be popular. but you got to think of it from the greater good or the benevolent part, because it may be, it's like taking medicine sometimes, it may swallow a little rough, but at the end of the day, you'll get better, and that's where the title came from.
It resounds with you, and also it is a very striking cover as well. So
thank
she
you.
Is there.
I actually laid it out and designed it myself, so thank you.
It's great. It's great. And not everyone has input in their cover, so congratulations to you on that.
If your listeners read the book, you'll see how to be a good negotiator and get things your way.
You're right. So the other thing you also talk about that was striking to me in chapter 19, which is lesson 19, is about the pot stirring 101.
Right.
And the
right.
key to continuous reinvention. You also talk about the boss's job is to stir the pot, which I don't believe every boss has in their vision.
Yeah, I think, and this is from years of experience in doing it, complacency will put you out of business. It's the railroads that should have been in the transportation business. Instead, they were in the railroad business, and they almost went away. That's being complacent. So look at everything through the eyes of the customer, and it's being one step ahead of the sheriff sometimes. As you're doing things, this is a wonderful country. Other people, other companies will try to do it, but do it better. So while you're doing things, you got to be planning to do the next thing. One of the worst things that happens in a company is I hate the term, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If it ain't broke, make it better is what I say.
I've heard that many times. If it ain't broke, make it better. If it ain't broke, break it.
Yeah, it is really a dreaded outcome. There's some fine companies that never made it because they got to a point and they stopped changing. It's a wonderful world, and today everything moves in matters of minutes, seconds, hours, sometimes days, and it's because of folks like you and radio shows, the internet, it's just amazing, and it all happens. News is disseminated in minutes, and if you're not improving constantly, you won't make it. That's a guarantee.
Now, have you ever been concerned about, okay, you've got this process that works fine, and then you go and retool it, that it's going to fail?
Oh, sure, but you have measured risks, so you create tests before you roll out. With 1,100 Office Max stores, I would never test something and change everything in all 1,100, so we always had test stores. In Max Wellness, my new startup company, which is a health and wellness chain, we do tests in varying degrees in different places. So you test something, you fine-tune it, you continually improve it, and then when it's ready for prime time, you take it every place. So there's measured risks, and being a risk-taker doesn't mean being reckless, and that's the big difference.
Well, and I would like to remind our listeners, we are on Job Talk, and it's AM 1530, and we're talking with Michael Foyer, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
You got it right. Perfect.
That is not my forte, pronouncing people's names. So.
I would correct you. Believe me, I'm not shy.
I love that. So, but I would like to say, even on your concept about test marketing thing,
mm-hmm.
one thing you do in the book also is talk about some failures.
Oh.
Which I love the one about the 16-year-old with acne shaking.
Yeah, right, yeah. True, very, very true story. And one of the fun things of being a benevolent dictator, you have to step up and not be afraid to show others you make some dumb mistakes. When I make mistakes, the difference is you do it with your head, your heart, and your gut. When you're doing it and you know in your gut it's not going to work, you stop it and change it and you say it was wrong. The important thing is to test. And I can tell you in my career, and I continue to make mistakes, but I fixed them quickly, nothing that would sink the ship. The big mistake is sometimes not taking the risk to try something new. If you're a baseball player and you bat 333, you'll probably make $15 million a year. That means that 6 times you strike out or don't get the base. So business can't be quite that low, but if you're over 50-60% in business, you're going to be pretty good. So the fear of being 100% right probably means you're not doing enough.
You know, and often we talk about, in fact, just a couple of weeks ago, we had Martin Yoda on here who was talking about in the job search, you need to act as though you are the CEO of a startup corporation called Me, Inc.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that completely. There's an old saying, if you don't love yourself, no one else will. And I think one of the big mistakes people make, whether it's a job search or raising money for a business or anything else, they can't articulate in a forceful, positive manner what they're trying to say. I call it an elevator pitch, and I talk about it in the book, The Benevolent Dictator. Pretend you're on the 20th floor. By the time you hear that little bell in the lobby, you better have gotten the who, what, why, where, and when of what you're trying to get across, because you may not get another chance.
Well, absolutely. And a lot of these lessons that you're talking about here with the startup, how can we apply some of these lessons to, as if you were a job seeker? Because essentially they are the head of their own corporation.
Exactly right, and it's very perceptive. I think every single lesson, including the one, there's a great chapter which I really like, if you don't ask, you don't get. I can tell your listeners from this perspective, I've hired thousands of people, and I'm more impressed with the people at the end of the conversation or in the follow-up letter ask for the order. It's like selling encyclopedias door-to-door. If you go do everything and you forget to ask, you'll never get. And I think in the job market, the lessons in The Benevolent Dictator really focus on accomplishing things. Some of the very flattering comments we've gotten in recent reviews, and the book's only been out a week and a half, is some people have reviewed it and said this is a book about how to get things done. It could be a book about life, and that's certainly getting a job, keeping a job, or moving on to the next job. And there are just so many lessons that come to mind, all of which are in the book, about how to do things. And I have another one that I think people really make a mistake and may help your listeners about job search. If you can't promote yourself, many people think it is inappropriate to promote themselves. Consequently, they do a terrible job of talking about their attributes. There's a big difference between boast and brag assertions and the ability to articulate what you've accomplished or what you can accomplish given the opportunity. I always love people. It could be a new graduate or a 60-year-old guy or gal. It comes in and says, I can do this because. And it always gets my attention.
You know, you also talk about let mother do the hiring.
Yeah, right, right. That's a good one, and it's so true. We all in our lives have had an instance where, and mother is a synonym for, it can be anyone that you care about that is your model of the right way to do things. But in my model, mother, we all had friends where your mom would say, don't hang out with that person. They're not right. They're going to get you in trouble. Same thing with hiring people. Someone may come in, you're interviewing them, in your gut, you know your mom would not approve. And they're either disingenuous, too flashy, not flashy enough, whatever. And so I've applied the mother rule to hiring people. And unfortunately, my mom passed away at a young age many, many years ago. But she would always talk to me as any mother would. I don't like this friend. I don't like that friend. Or think about this. Think about that. In the mother rule, you sort of do what's right. Another way of using and imply the mother rule is if you're doing whatever you're doing and you wouldn't want it on the front page of the Chicago Tribune, you probably shouldn't do it because you're going to be embarrassed or get in trouble. That's the mother rule.
Well, and understanding as you do, whether you're an entrepreneur, which many people looking for work become entrepreneurs naturally, and sometimes
absolutely.
It works out, sometimes it doesn't, but the other thing is understanding how very expensive it is to make a wrong hire.
Yeah, I owned another company called Cymax Solutions, and Cymax Solutions was a software program to screen people to make the right decision. Startling statistic, if you have to hire someone, make a bad decision, the cost can be 300% of the annual salary depending on the job, and that includes the cost of downtime, the damage done, the morale problems, whatever. Very, very costly, and the big thing is use the mother rule in the back of your mind, and it'll help you sometimes. I believe you run a business with your head, your heart, and your gut. On a given day, any one of those will get you through, and that's the real key.
Making those hiring mistakes certainly can be costly, which is also a very good reason to always use a skilled recruiter.
I got to tell you, and that is an interesting point. I used to think, why do I need a recruiter? And the time and energy saved is incredible, as well as the abilities. The advantage of a recruiter is a good recruiter can ferret out and ask questions that you can't ask or don't want to ask or embarrassed to ask or maybe inappropriate to ask, but a third party can do a lot of those things very appropriately and ask those tough questions, and a good recruiter represents the client, and that's his or her job.
Well, Well, Michael, in all fair disclosure, I am the attorney of the group. Paul is a recruiter.
Okay, I figured that out.
So now his ego and head is so big, I don't think we'll be able to get him out of the studio.
There you go. Well, he probably deserves it. And as they all say, you know, attorneys are the ones you can't live with, but you certainly can't live without. So there's, like everything else, there is balance.
There you go. Well, I am curious because you have interviewed a lot of people, and with this other business you mentioned, that it's a software solution that specifically screens people. Are there any, and I know that we're kind of veering from the book here just a little bit, but what are some of the key questions that you would ask some of the people that you're interviewing so that you can
sure.
put the right people through your screen? Or?
Right. Well, I think some of the time, I think interviews, I hate the question, what do you want to be 5 years from now? My answer is alive. And that's a dumb question, because what's someone going to tell you? I think what I try to do, and I talk about this in the book, so it is in The Benevolent Dictator, and the advantage of the book, it tells both the person looking for a job or the person doing the hiring how to handle the process. But what I try to do in interviews is always ask open-ended questions that require something more than a yes or no. And many questions I ask, and I've learned this and I talk about it in the book, many of the questions I ask during an interview, I already know the answer, but it shows me how does a person think and how do they respond. I will also, depending on the level of the position, and I talk about this in the book, The Benevolent Dictator, I will ask questions that are pretty tough and some of which they are difficult to answer. What I'm looking for when that occurs is not what they answer, but how they handle responding. So if you start to notice perspiration dripping down their nose and forehead and they can't seem to get their breath, you know, you probably don't have someone that works well under pressure. On the other hand, if they, you know, some of the smartest ones are you restate the question and you dissect it, and that's how you answer it. But I don't look for always what the answer is. I look at what and how they respond depending on the job for which I'm trying to fill.
Do you have any examples of some of those tough questions that you would ask?
Yes. Let's say you worked for a company that was less than stellar results, and I would say, Paul, you worked for company A, B, and C, and it went out of business. Can you tell me why? And they'll answer that. And then let's say you were a vice president. I would say, I'm sure the CEO made the decisions, but you were a member of the management team because you just told me you're one of the top executives. What role did you play, Paul, in bringing the company down, and what lesson did you learn? I hate people to say, it wasn't my fault. I had a boss and he or she fouled up. That doesn't work. So you make people respond in a good interview, and I talk about it again in the book, how to get people to you really want to dig and find out not so much what they can do, but how can they think, because as they respond to you is how they will respond if they're dealing with one of your clients or your people or whatever.
That's a fantastic question. I'm taking notes as we're going.
There you go. Well, you don't have to take notes. Buy the book and read it, and you got the answers.
I do have a copy right in front of me, and I definitely encourage everyone else here who's listening to do the same.
Terrific.
So time is money, money is time, and we know that you're busy, but can you leave us with maybe three things? I mean, you have so much to offer everyone, but as a budding entrepreneur, do you have three things that you would have written yourself, you know, 20 years ago, had you known?
Oh, gosh. You know, you learn from the past to plan for the future. I wish I knew what I knew 20 years ago, and I wouldn't have had all these scars I have on my back. I think the first thing is, which I think is one of the biggest cop-outs if you're starting a business or looking for a job or anything like that, is saying, well, if it was such a great idea that I have, someone else would have done it. Well, I say bunk to that, because most people, and it's okay, but most people don't know how to launch something, and they think that the other guy always has the best idea. The truth is, maybe 50 people have the idea, but the important thing is know how to launch it, and that's what the book does, how to get from point A to point Z and have fun along the way. Second big mistake most companies and most people make, excuse me, is I can't do it because I don't have the money. There is plenty of money out there. I call it OPM, other people's money. But to get the money, you have to look at, if you're raising money, what is in it for someone else if I win and I'm a huge success? And once you figure that out, you go to those people and you give them the reasons why they should help back you. And as an example, let's say it's a landlord with an empty shopping center, and that's a wasting asset. So you go to the landlord and say, I'll put in a store. I have bad news. I can't pay you for a year, so I want free rent. But once the store is going, I'll give you a 10-year lease. Always look at it through the lens of the customer or the other person who could be a winner, and that's a real key. And the other one is a real difficult one that most people grapple with in terms of starting a business is there's not enough good people out there. To get good people, you number one, as we said earlier in the interview, you have to be a good teacher and a good pot stirrer. I never could figured out how to teach people to be smart, but there are a lot of smart people. As an entrepreneur, you have to learn how to develop people, and as a recruiter, you know that, Paul, as well. You have to be able to develop people, and there's a lot of good people. The trick is finding ordinary or positive ordinary people and put them in extraordinary situations. They become extraordinary people, and again, I talk about that in the book, The Benevolent Dictator.
Excellent, excellent. And before we let you go, I did have one just personal curiosity question here. You co-found Office Max, and then you've got Max Wellness and
right.
Max Ventures. And
right.
You seem to have an obsession with the name Max.
I do, and it's a very simple reason, and I get this question all the time. I am not a superstitious person, but on the other hand, I don't go out of my way to walk under ladders, have cats walk in front of me, and break mirrors all the time. So it worked once with Office Max, and it hasn't stopped working for me. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's a great name, and half the people I meet think my name is Max instead of Michael, and I'll answer to anything as long as they pay me.
There you go. And I've got a one-year-old at my house, and his name is Max.
Oh, no kidding. That's terrific. I love that name.
He's in on it. So wonderful. So again, it's Michael Foyer with The Benevolent Dictator. I highly encourage everyone to go out and get a copy of this book for yourself. It's truly fantastic. And is there any recommendations on where people can pick this up?
Yes, the book is available at every bookstore in the United States, every airport. It's also available on Amazon.com and at thebenevolentdictator.biz. Don't forget, it's biz, B-I-Z, not com.
And you have some free resources for people out there.
Yes, there's some great things in the back of the book, which was very creative, is after you read the book, there are things there's a code in the back of the book. You can log on and hear other interviews and get some new ideas. And I'd love your readers to buy, or your listeners, excuse me, to buy the book. If they send me a note and say they heard me on your show, I will promise you I will answer them.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here with us. We really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it very much. Have a good day.
Okay, you too.
Well, that was The Benevolent Dictator himself, Michael Foyer. And now we're going to hear from our